Hi, you're tuned to Truth News Radio Australia on the 18th of February 2017. My name's Hereward Fenton. Great to have you aboard. And today, I've got an exclusive interview lined up for you with a man who's been on the show before, a couple of years ago now. A man who's done some very, very interesting things and taken some great risks in the name of liberty and truth. And he joins us from Kuala Lumpur, and his name is Brendan O'Connell, an Australian, a man who really has done some very interesting work looking into issues about Israeli influence in Australia, Israeli control of corporations, particularly in the security industry, and has challenged some of the more extreme laws in relation to anti-discrimination, and has actually really gone to great lengths in trying to hold up the principle of freedom. So with that, let me introduce Brendan O'Connell to the show. Welcome, mate. Welcome back to the show.
Hereward, great to be back, mate. Thanks.
Yeah, look, it's great to have you on again. The last time we had you on was a couple of years ago, 2014, actually, a bit more than that. And just for our audience, I'll very briefly give a recap of what I remember from your story. And I've, of course, known you for a while now, for about 8 or 9 years almost. And you actually popped up on one of the forums that we were running about 9/11. And, you know, back around about 2007, 2008, there was a lot of speculation about 9/11, about the attacks of September 11 and who was really behind it. And that was even, you know, that was just as the architects and engineers for 9/11 Truth and groups like that were getting going. And one of the theories that had popped up was that Israel had a hand in September 11. And this is something that that I certainly think is possible. And I do believe that many intelligence agencies actually collaborated in at least allowing it to happen, and that there is some sort of cabal that exists within the world's intelligence communities, which is extremely dark and evil, and Mossad is certainly part of that. Now, Brendan, you sort of popped up on those forums, and I think you were talking about some of these issues, and some people found your views a little bit extreme. And, of course, you also were of the view that that Israel is a racist, homicidal regime, and this is something that you were quite determined to say, despite the fact that the very draconian anti-discrimination laws now actually make it a bit of a risk to say that, even though it's really just a political statement, but you can be hooked by anti-discrimination laws against a religion when you talk about Jews. And this, of course, is what happened to you, Brendan, when you did your series of YouTube videos, because they identified you as being anti-Semitic. And anyway, and just giving a quick recap here for the audience, after that you ended up going to jail for a while, and that was pretty horrific. You were in maximum security, you were released from jail, you went back to your citizen journalism and were arrested again, and there are still charges pending on you from that second arrest, but in the meantime you left Australia and went to Iran, where you did some really interesting stuff and nearly organised a conference, and now you're in KL, and here you are talking to me.
That's a good summary. That's a brief summary. There's a bit of detail in between, but yeah, that's pretty much it, Howard. That's pretty much it. Here I sit in Kuala Lumpur.
Yeah. So let's actually talk a little about your visit to Iran, because I'm really, really fascinated about that. Did you just jump on a plane, or did you have people pre-organized to meet? How did you actually go about doing it?
Well, no, I just jumped on a plane. It's a very long story, but when I did a hunger strike in Casuarina prison in 2012, I asked Mark Glenn, I was talking to Mark Glenn over the phone, who's regularly on Press TV, and I said, Mark, will you ask via Press TV contacts if Iran will accept my political asylum? He got back to me. He said, yes, contacts got through even to Mahmoud Ahmadinejad himself. And via Press TV contacts, they said they would welcome my political asylum with open arms. there's a long story after that. Mark said I would be attending conferences in Iran with himself and Ken O'Keefe and others. That appeared to fall through. That's a long story, which involves Mark and his problems getting a visa. That's another story. But I was pretty disappointed with Iran. Anyway, I then went through a long period of homelessness and being harassed. Had no money. It was a fairly desperate time. I managed to get to Sydney. Some people offered to put me up. I met Hamid Fadaroli, senior international correspondent for Press TV, and I gave him my synopsis of my case. He was blown away. He said, "Man, you're one man against the world," and promised me a documentary, which Press TV never produced. Hamid was pretty upset about that. But cut a long story short, I always believed I would get the High Court, and there's a lot of detail here. I was extremely harassed big time and driven half insane, which I think was the plan, broken into, property stolen, friends harassed. When finally I needed money, I had to get out of WA, I felt, and I emailed Minister Joe Francis in charge of the prisons, and I tried to have one of the prison officers investigated for organising my beating. I was vilified in the office. We had an altercation in the office of Department of Corrective Services investigation. The staff were horrendous. And I emailed the minister and said in very blunt terms that basically, it was an act of desperation to stir the pot, that if you didn't investigate Liam Samuel Cashman for organising my beating in jail, I'd kill the bee, B-A-S-T-A-R-D. And it bounced back. It was a private email due to bad language. And so I just posted it to my blog and sent him the link. And the minister actually rang me half an hour later. And to cut a very long story short, it ended up weeks later in charges being laid of a threat to kill, making a private telephone call public when I rang the office of Foreign Minister Julie Bishop. They were joke charges. And they strung those charges out for over 2 years and raided me repeatedly, intimidated me, threatened me. They used every dirty trick in the book. And finally, when I thought it was coming to an end, they again delayed for another 3 months and said that I was clearly mentally ill and I would have to undergo a psychiatric evaluation. And I said, "That's it." And I borrowed $3,000, jumped on a plane and came to Malaysia. And that's that segment. That's that part.
I see, yeah. Well, you don't seem to be mentally ill to me. You seem to be very, very lucid. You seem to be very clear. I mean, I can see that your views are very challenging. And why don't we just focus a little on that? I want to talk about Iran. I want to know what happened there. But I'd like you to just give me a synopsis of what your thesis is, or what it is that you have to say that people find so problematic.
Well, there's two. I call them the twin pillars of what I've found to be important and what stirred the pot to a horrendous degree, where even the Israeli ambassador and deputy foreign minister came out personally against me, a world's first, in the biggest criminal contempt of court case in history. I talk about Israeli intelligence activity, their infiltration of the entire database, security network, telcos, banking and finance systems, medical, particularly securing of Class A infrastructure, ports, telecommunication centres, perhaps even nuclear reactors in Japan and other places. And I stumbled onto information. I had heard about this 2007 via Mike Rivero and Christopher Bolin, Operation Telpiot, where they trained up military intelligence officers to start private companies in the security industry and electronics communications.
Wow.
Now it's a technology juggernaut. It's the world's leader in high technology military contracts. And then I discovered RAD Group, RAD, by Zohar Zisapel, and it just burgeoned from there, so much so that I threatened to raise these issues at my trial. And the harassment began, but the Inspector of Counterterrorism, Barry Shelton, actually said, "We all respect your work and we want to talk to you about what we write about." And that was when the ambassador turned up. So there was that aspect, which I stumbled into. And I had personal knowledge of the naval weapons and sensor systems used in Australian submarines, which are Israeli, which I divulged. The other pillar is, of course, Jewish racial and religious supremacism as the answer to why the treatment of the indigenous population of Palestine is so bad, that the Orthodox and ultra-Orthodox Judaism, which is known as Rabbinic Pharisaic Judaism, which is the dominant sect of Judaism, yes, upwards of 80% of religious Jews identify as Orthodox. And then, of course, we have the ultra-Orthodox who are complete lunatics. I'm sure you're well aware, Howard, I don't need to say it, the levels of racist ranting, crazy, homicidal stuff that comes out of the mouths of their top rabbis. These are not marginalized religious extremists. These are mainstream in Israeli society. Chabad Lubavitch, Kahanas, Rabbi Avadia Yosef, the Shaz Party, they're involved in politics, regularly calling for the genocide of Palestinians, calling non-Jews their slaves, soulless animals. I mean, it makes an Adolf Hitler Nuremberg rally appear like a Boy Scout convention. And those were the two pillars I couldn't understand why the Islamic community didn't seem to go after in an organized way. And I decided to raise these things at trial. And when I did, all hell broke loose, basically.
Well, that is very interesting, actually, Brendan, because, I mean, it's not something we hear on the news. We hear about the radical ideology of Islam. But we don't hear about what you're describing about extremist rabbis calling for genocide. And I actually am not directly aware of this myself. I mean, I've heard people mentioning it before, but I would like to actually get more detail from you on it and like to put more of that on my show. So were you actually putting this on your blog? Were you actually blogging about this? Or were you were doing YouTube videos as well?
I was doing YouTube and some blogging. Yeah. I was very half-hearted at the time. I was 38 years old and I realized I had to get a life, decide to get back into nursing. And I'm interested in actually not looking at Jewish supremacism or Israel. My interest is permaculture, land regeneration, and basically living on a commune. That's actually my number one interest.
Yeah.
And at that stage, I'll just leave it as short as I stumbled into that incident on May the 2nd, 2009, and it just skyrocketed from there. I thought it would be over in a few months. It's now been 8 years. I have not helped the situation. Admittedly, I'm very combative, and my family was threatened. Some very nasty things happened. It's just I think if you've ever seen Homer Simpson where he's in the nuclear reactor and he's leaning back sleeping with his coffee and he absolutely hits the red button and all hell breaks loose, you know, that sort of scene in The Simpsons.
Oh, okay.
That's really just me. I just stumbled into this, and after the arrest, and I was threatened by Detective Paney when he said, "When this court case is over, it won't be over." I went into full combat mode, and I began to basically, I think the Australian colloquialism is pull the piss, which is make jokes about the whole thing. And unfortunately, the DPP or the DA's office, as it's known in America, were not laughing, and they came after me even harder.
And this was in the lead up to your original conviction. This was in 2010, right? Because you went to prison as a result of a conviction for supposedly harassing Stanley Kaiser. Is that correct?
Well, there were two seven charges in all. I was found guilty of six. The first charge was under Section 80B, which is conduct likely to offend, that I offended Stanley Kaiser by calling him a racist Jew. And the others were Section 77, which is a form of incitement. They were much more serious. And, I mean, they were a joke. Everyone was just looking at them. But, of course, the Jewish community were very embarrassed. That's why they had a whole campaign saying, oh, no, it wasn't really because of that. It was because he threatened to kill children and stalked us. I didn't even know where they were. I didn't know their phone numbers. Didn't even know where the damn synagogue was. Yes. No lie was beneath them, Hayward. No lie was beneath them. And the media printed it. If I had a lawyer, believe me, I'd be a rich man.
Absolutely. And we'll get into that when we come back from the break. And I've seen the videos. They're actually on YouTube. You can see your altercation there with Stanley Kaiser. Because it's very important. There's some principles there that need to be articulated. We're going to break. We'll be right back. Stay with us. Hi, welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio, and I'm talking today to Brendan O'Connell, a man on the run, a man with a mission to wake us up about discrimination, about the discrimination against free speech in Australia, and that is the main thing that I want to focus on, Brendan, because your story makes me remember something. I was watching a couple of days ago. a libertarian was talking about the new left progressivism. And the new left progressivism has actually become a form of totalitarianism. And the old left progressivism, by contrast, would have a view such as, you know, I may hate what you say, but I will defend to the death your right to say it. That was the old left-wing progressivism that I grew up believing that was what the left was about preserving freedoms. But the new left, and really this applies to conservative or left-wing governments, it's a new type of thing. It's not really about the traditional left-right paradigm, but it goes by the name of progressivism or left progressive left. But it is actually a form of a very intolerant, very totalitarian system, which is tied with legislation along lines of political correctness, which makes it a crime to offend people. And you committed the crime of offending someone. And it's very important that you've actually illustrated what can happen when these laws get applied and how dangerous it is to have these laws. Because I mean, you're one case, you're a test case, you're a canary down the mine. But in a scenario where our society devolves into something much more chaotic, and when some of these international problems of violence and terrorism really come to Australia, they'll be using these laws very, very aggressively, and they'll be using them to lock people up, to convict people who haven't done anything to hurt anyone, haven't even threatened anyone. I mean, your situation is you didn't threaten Stanley Kaiser, you didn't incite violence against him, you offended him. I mean, you didn't touch him, you didn't threaten him, you offended him.
Well, he alleges he was offended.
And indeed, and this is so important, because under the legislation, and this also applies to homosexual vilification legislation, as well as religious vilification legislation, you do not have to prove that the person was offended. You only have to demonstrate, someone has to demonstrate that it's possible to be offended. And if it's possible to be offended, they can claim they were offended, and they don't even have to prove they were offended. And these laws have been tried out in Victoria, and in New South Wales, there is an ongoing flood of litigation in relation to homosexual vilification. And in each case, it really just takes one individual to claim that they are homosexual and that they've been offended by something that someone has said, either printed in the newspaper or on a television show. Generally, it has to be a public act of some kind. Your case was public because you're putting it on YouTube. But once that public act has occurred, someone can claim they've been offended, and then you're done. Really, they've got it stitched up so that it's very hard to counteract it. Now, what's your take on this? Because this is really what you're involved in here is a battle about free speech, is it not?
Well, absolutely, although people would say there's no such thing. Look, Peter Foss, if anyone wants the best synopsis of the whole case and the whole issue, it's my synopsis. I wrote in jail, took me 6 months with a badly broken arm. It's available on my website. I don't know if you can put a link up. isolatebutpreserve.blogspot.com and sure. www.boc.rocks.
Yeah, we'll put a link up to that on the website.
Yeah, it's my high court synopsis. Now, it gives a rundown of the case. I never completely finished it because I was just too exhausted doing it. But the Hansard debate in 2004, I've quoted from it. Now, Peter Foss was the Attorney General in Western Australia. He said many interesting things. One of the things he said is this Section 80B is very dangerous. In law, the term likely and the term offend are just so nefarious, it's meaningless. Mm. So in the Hansard itself, the Attorney General is saying this is very dangerous. And he also stated, from the legal perspective, it's an open slather approach and ridiculous. And he noted, it's an incredible Hansard, 2004, people can look it up, it's also in my PDF document, where he states that an interesting thing is the head of the Jewish Zionist movement here in Perth, who does the Maccabean paper, Mr. Yaron Dror, D-R-O-R. And he said, ironically, this man is pushing for the legislation, but he would be the first man to be charged under it. That's a quote from the Attorney General, Peter Foss.
Wow.
And he said, but if we did ban that sort of material, it would create very big problems for us. And I mean, it's an incredible Hansard. People stood up and said, this is the most ridiculous legislation ever made. That ADB must go, and that's Section 18C under the federal legislation, which the Liberal Party and others want in the federal court dismissed. That's why my case is so important, because my case is the one that ends this legislation. No matter where you are in the world, under similar jurisdiction, whether it's the US or Great Britain, my case is defining, which is why more people must understand it.
Can I just ask, the case that you went to prison for, was that the federal case, or was that...
That was state legislation,
okay,
criminal legislation. But okay. Section 80B, which is conduct likely to offend the Australian legislation, is identical, literally identical to Section 18C, which is what they want in the High Court. So my case ends the whole free speech issue on that dangerous part of the legislation. It ends it. That's why people must look at my case.
So presently, is it before the Senate, or is it something that's going to be... deliberated on this year, or what's the deal?
They keep raising it in the public issue. Look, my contacts tell me they're directly imploring me to get to the High Court. Legal Aid would not fund me. I got all the way to the roundtable discussion. They said, your chances of winning are slim, we're not going to fund it, which is ludicrous. I had a High Court appeal barrister, Dr. John Walsh, stated it has a very high chance of success. It's got the public interest component. They clearly want it in the High Court. But that is the machinations of, shall we say, very powerful interest group in Western Australia who are largely not known to many people but rural West Australia with an iron fist. I mean, community leader and anti-racist campaigner and Mr. Suresh Rajan, a nice man. I met him over coffee, but I'm going to quote him. He said, Brendan, 3,000 members of the Perth Jewish community have the political class by the balls in this state. That's a quote by Suresh Rajan, who's well known. Yeah. Now, I'm saying that because he has been very vehement about his anti-racist campaigns, but he will not mention Jewish racism. And that's got to stop. This has to be addressed. The lives of people in overseas, and lives of people like me who want to speak out against what is clearly a radical, dangerous ideology that is permeating, levels of government and high level, high technology sector. We can't have this sort of ideology getting access to first world, armies, and it's very dangerous.
Well, one aspect of your research really just highlights the danger of having a foreign country having so many tentacles into very sensitive parts of our infrastructure. That's something that regardless of what you think about Judaism or the political ideologies of Zionism, this is something that you would not want to have. You wouldn't want to have any country doing that. And we do seem to see that. And I'd like to actually, get some more details on that and talk about it more in later shows. And in some of your videos, the one I watched yesterday, you're talking about the increasing concentration of high-tech companies in Israel, and effectively they're talking about almost moving Silicon Valley to Israel. And that is a very, very interesting thing, and I didn't know this was really happening. I mean, you've done some very important research, you're digging it up, but isn't it intriguing that this is sort of happening a little bit below the radar? It's not really being talked about to such an extent, but it is very, very significant.
Oh, absolutely. Look, this is identical when Henry Kissinger and co. went and supported Mao Zedong originally and Sidney Rittenberg, a Jewish man, an American Jew who was in American military intelligence and a linguist. The man who stayed behind is his book. He was the handler for Mao, and you see that whole gang, Shlomo Adler and the old Silver Master Spy ring supporting Mao, same character, same people, Henry Kissinger, and they then shifted all American heavy industry and manufacturing to China. Well, now we see the same people moving it to Israel.
Moving it to Israel, yeah.
High technology to Israel.
Yeah, and that gives the people who are pushing the buttons there enormous power, especially when they've got connections with intelligence operations. We're just going to break. You're with Truth News Radio. We'll be back for two more segments. Don't go away. Very important interview. We'll be right back. Hi, welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio. And I'm talking to Brendan O'Connell about Israel and its influence in the world. And we're also going to be talking a little bit about Iran shortly. Brendan, let's just continue on this vein of the high-tech concentration in Israel, because it's a very interesting subject. And I would actually like to compile a list of the companies that are significant in the tech industries that are in Israel or that are moving to Israel. One that I've been aware of for a long time, which is very significant, is the company that makes the programming language PHP, which drives about 90% of all the websites in the world. It is the glue that holds the internet together, and it is completely owned by an Israeli company, and it's free. And, you know, isn't it great? Because it's a fantastic piece of technology, and it's continually being developed. It's very leading edge. It's very, very good. I work in it. That's kind of my other profession. That's what I do. I'm a programmer. And my thing is PHP. But when I discovered that PHP was completely owned by an Israeli company, I was like, oh, my goodness, you know, wow. That is interesting, isn't it? Well, it's just because, you know, here's a country that is in the middle of such highly explosive political relationship to the rest of the world, and admittedly sees itself as a country under threat, a country that some other countries want to wipe off the map, and with a very, very aggressive intelligence operation going on, and a system like PHP, which could have unknown back doors in it. We have no idea. I mean, it's such a vast thing. The framework, the underlying compiled software that runs the programming language, we have no idea what back doors may be in PHP. And you know, wouldn't you, if you were running Israel and you had a company like this, right? I mean, it'd just be an opportunity too hard to knock back, wouldn't it? To think could you know. If we could just engineer something so we could just get back doors into any website that was running PHP, how about that?
Yeah, well, it's not an opportunity. They created it from the beginning. They never do anything by accident. They had this plan for over 40 years.
Yeah.
And forget the US or NATO, all right? These companies are Israeli-based with dual national American-Israeli citizens or American Jews linked in with Israel, many who've served in the Israeli Defense Force under Operation Talpiot. And they're from Australia, they're from Europe, they're from America, and you don't know them from a bar of soap, and they're working in your company. I mean, Leon Wend, who started it with me, an Australian Jewish man who was working in the IDF and installing the weapons and sensor systems on the Collins class sub, which started this all for me in 2005. I mean, he's now working in BHP. He's worked for Variant and installed the security systems on Class A infrastructure like the Sydney Rail Transit System. He's now working for BHP, and you know BHP is very concerned about China getting access to its quotes and its data. And you now have a man close with Israeli intelligence and Israel is extremely close to China and India, pouring billions of dollars of high technology into these countries. I mean, you could just extrapolate out, not just from that software. I'm glad you mentioned that. I mean, that is incredible. The entire web interface is basically going to be one giant backdoor for Israel.
That company is Zend. The name of that company is Zend. Wow. I don't know what else they own. I haven't really looked into what else they own. They're obviously very, very big, very powerful. And one thing that's often puzzled me is where they get the money for it, because obviously it's a free product. It's a bit like Java. You know, Java's
you know
a totally
where, you know
free
where
product.
It comes from here. You know where the money comes from. Ask Rabbi Dov Zakheim. Right. 2IC at Booz Allen Hamilton. He lost $3 trillion. He lost $3 trillion from the Pentagon. I know where it went.
Interesting. Now, you also mentioned in your video that Intel is moving a big part of its operations to Israel. Do you know much more about that?
Yeah, it was moved in 2006. Now, they claimed it was the most advanced outside the United States, but it's more than the most advanced outside the United States. It's the most advanced chip fabrication factory in the world. It's doing router chips, chips for phones, all sorts of stuff. Mm. So not only do you have, like very interesting, you know, the entire web interface, the entire PHP, programming level, you also have the hardware level where they can put hardware backdoors, kill switches, they can kill your router, they can do all sorts of incredible stuff. And this is all coming out of Israel. And they are stealing the technology from the American taxpayer and they're repackaging it and selling it onto America's enemies like China or emerging threats, China and India. And, of course, it's probably a giant scam. Everyone builds up. The Lockheed Raytheon or the big companies get new contracts, as they say, you know, look, China's building up. We'll need another $10 billion contract. Thank you. It's just this big arms industry, weapons scam, high technology scam. And Trump's in it too because he knows, just like Ronald Reagan with the big Star Wars fiasco of the late 80s, if you want to stimulate a ruined economy, you've got to go through the military high tech sector. And that's what Donald Trump is about to do. So they need this trouble. And even though I believe Trump is probably sincere, he's a lackey. He's a lackey. And I actually honestly think the generals and the big military corporations are all talking to each other and saying, you know, China, can you build a couple of islands out in the middle of the China Sea there and stir some trouble up so we can get some contracts? I literally believe it's operating at that level.
Well, yes. While the media is obsessing about identity politics, about whether Trump is a misogynist or, you know, a racist or a homophobe and all this rubbish, there are things going on that are very serious and very important that, that the media is, you know, barely paying any attention to. And the connections between Trump and Israel are so deep on so many levels. And then you see, you know, one of the first major statements that comes out of the administration being essentially a threat against Iran. You do start to wonder, don't you? And this is what I was talking about in my last show. I'm quite pro-Trump in a lot of ways. And I think a lot of the policies that he's brought in are great. And I'm very strong against the anti-globalism trend in what he has actually put forth. But if the price to pay for this is kind of a devil's bargain with Israel, then it sort of makes me wonder whether we're just being played here. You know, I still don't know. It's really hard to say. But we all know, I mean, those of us who've done our research, those of us who've done our homework, know that Iran was on a hit list of countries going back to 2001, the famous list of seven countries that was given to General, forgotten his name, I mentioned it in the last week, but anyway, it wasn't Petraeus, it will come back to me. Anyway, he's very well known in the truth community, but there was a list of seven countries, and those seven countries included Iran, Iraq, Syria, Libya, Somalia, and I think Lebanon. Now those seven countries almost mirror exactly the countries that are on the ban list of travel with Trump's executive order. They almost perfectly match, except for Lebanon. So it's the same seven countries. Now, most of those countries have already been taken out. You know, Libya obviously gone, Syria almost gone, but then, you know, we don't know really what's going to happen with Syria. Maybe it's going to be okay there. We still don't know. But obviously, a lot of these countries have already been attacked, but Iran hasn't been yet. There's been massive sanctions, obviously threats, but Iran is still, from what I understand, doing pretty well, and from what you told me privately, economically, it's not doing too badly at all, despite the sanctions. And this is probably actually a good time for us to start talking about Iran, because we haven't really got that much long left in the show, because you went to Iran with all of your research and all of your ideas and all of your anti-Israel rhetoric, if I may say. And what you told me was that you weren't greeted as warmly as you expected, although they did greet you and they did give you safe harbour, but they weren't particularly interested in the more cutting-edge things you had to say about Israel.
Well, I went twice. The first time I went off my own back, it was a $200 airfare from Kuala Lumpur. I had planned to stay. I was warned not to go, but I just woke up one morning and I thought, I have to go. Otherwise, I'll be sitting there going, oh, I wonder if.
Can I just ask, you need a visa? Did you have to get a visa first?
Australia is one of seven countries where you can get a visa at the airport. It's very expensive. It's about $145.
Okay.
€125? I can't remember.
And how long do you get? How long do they stamp your passport?
One month. You get 30-day visa. Okay. And you know, it's a nightmare going through the airport, 3 hours sometimes.
Wow.
They're very backward in some way, very backward. They've got excellent ballistic missiles, but some of the other stuff is, they spend all their money on ballistic missiles. But anyway, I stayed at a cheap hotel, Hotel Ferozzi. I went to the foreign ministry. I just walked down there. Some people said, how did you get to Iran? Like, was this big deal? I said, dude, I just jumped on a damn plane.
We just have to cut you off. Sorry, we're going to break. You're with Truth News Radio. We'll be back for one more segment talking about Iran with Brendan O'Connell, who's actually spent several months there recently. Very, very interesting inside information. Don't go away.
What happens in terms of creating wars is a mind manipulation technique called problem reaction solution. And it works like this. And it works like this. First of all, you create the problem, but you get someone else to be blamed for it. You then report that problem through the media in the way you want it reported. You get the public to react to your problem by saying something must be done, this can't go on, what are they going to do about it?
You're with Truth News Radio Australia, welcome back. And Brendan O'Connell is on the line. And Brendan, you were just talking about your first trip there to Iran. Very, very interesting. You bought a ticket, got the visa on arrival at the airport, and there you were. In a very strange land.
Yes, indeed. But, you know, who dares wins? You've got to have a go. You know, another chapter for the book.
Yeah.
So I took all my... I'd printed out voluminous copies of my synopsis and I'd put data and my videos and everything on disc. And I just got to the I had to borrow $3,000 to leave after they declared me mentally ill and whatnot. And I thought, to hell with it, and I left.
Yeah.
I wondered if they wanted me to sometimes because I was a little bit edgy about whether they were going to stop me at the airport, but it was well. I went to the walked to the foreign ministry and said, hello, my name is Brendan O'Connell. I would like to speak to someone about applying for political asylum. And he went, oh. And he said, just put his hand up to stop, because few people, they do not speak a lot of English there at all, mostly
okay.
Arabic. In fact, they look down on learning English, many of them, believe it or not. That's another story, another little thing you pick up when you go through there. And I spoke to a fellow who spoke good English, and we had very nice chat, very into hospitality. The guy said, who do you think will win the election? And I said, oh, probably Trump by a landslide. And he went, yeah, he sort of agreed. He mentioned Dr. Steve Pachenik, who we should quickly talk about later.
Yeah.
And then he casually remarked, oh, I can't remember his exact words, but it was like, we can deal with Israel. Like nothing. It was nothing. And I thought, yeah, really? Anyway, so I thought, wow, you must know something I don't know.
It's very cocky, yeah.
I guess you're the government. Yeah, you're pretty cocky. And that's actually true. They are very cocky, dangerously cocky. Anyway, he was very nice. I had chai. I mean, the Iranians drink chai or tea to make the English look tame, I assure you.
Yeah.
They
don't drink beer. That's I just clarify.
No.
You can't get a beer anywhere in Iran.
You cannot get any alcohol.
Okay.
It's black market though. I did get a glass of vodka when I got in the car at the airport though.
Yeah. Okay.
With a cry of no freedom. But anyway, that's another story.
Okay.
Yeah. I've got stories galore. So I'm sitting in that hotel, and cut a long story short, I can't get any money in. Hamid Farouli from Press TV was helping me. It was a real cluster. They could cut my funds off my PayPal. They stopped my PayPal at one stage. Then they started it again. You can't get money in at all. Hammy helped me out. And he said it could take months, Brendan, to be processed. I thought, what am I going to do? I said, I'm going to have to leave. What a debacle.
Oh, yes, let's just point that out for the audience. No bank transactions work outside of Iran. You can't use your Visa card. You can't use your ATM card with international transactions. None of that. Cirrus. None of those inter ATM services work.
Nope. Okay. PayPal doesn't work. You have to use a VPN to get to PayPal. Any of those, it's all blocked. But you have to bring your own cash.
Okay.
Can you use
traveler's checks, or you just got to
bring
cash?
Nothing. Cash. That's it. US dollars or euros, and you got to change them.
Wow.
But the locals have ways of getting past it through Turkey and other places. They're very close to Swiss banking, which became clear to me. So they have ways around it. It's a Silk Road, baby. They know what they're doing. Believe me, sanctions aren't biting that hard.
Okay.
But I decided to leave, and I was booking my ticket, and the computer kept cutting out. And then I suddenly get a phone call from a Mr. Javid saying, Mr. O'Connell, I'll see you on Tuesday. I went, oh, how coincidental. Just as I'm about to leave and I'm trying to book a ticket, he came. And he was a very nice man. We had a good laugh. His English wasn't that good. And he said, Mr. O'Connell, you have political asylum, verbally to me, across the table. I went, great. But can I please speak to someone who speaks English? Because at that stage, I didn't really want to. I just wanted to speak to someone.
Yes.
But I said, okay, leave it at that. He said, we had a chat for about an hour. I tried to explain what a submarine was in my English, which was very funny because I didn't know Farsi. And he took my stuff and he was very happy. And he said, "Are you happy here?" And I said, "Yeah." What I should have said was "Yeah, but I don't have any money." And he just walked off. And that was my fault. And I realized that, man, I'm in the poo here. I can't stay here. Hammy said some things to me and I thought, you know what? To hell with this. And I just jumped on the plane. I was very anxious and left. I was very diplomatic, but there were some things that went on that I wasn't happy about. And
so that was the first trip?
That was the first trip. Okay. That was the first trip. I then got an email from a lawyer. I won't say his name just yet because he's a nut, but he's a lawyer based in Georgia, Atlanta, Georgia. And he said, we don't operate this way. That's very unfortunate. We're going to hook you up with the Persian Gulf Study Center. Please jump on a plane and get back in case you're arrested. Jump on a plane now. We're going to look after you. This is not the way, Iranian way. And I went, oh, great. So I jumped on a plane. I was greeted at the airport with a glass of 100-proof vodka. So the first drink I had in 6 months was in Iran.
Okay.
And it sort of materially, I was very well looked after materially. They gave me whatever I wanted. They did stick me in Hunza, a very nice place, don't get me wrong.
Right.
And I couldn't communicate with people, had obligations. It was very frustrating. The lady looking after me was very nice but a bit strange. She definitely had medical problems to do with cognitive function.
Did you have access to the internet?
Yes, but it was intermittent. I was getting cut off all the time. I couldn't do work for people, I promised.
And social media is blocked in Iran, is that right?
Completely blocked.
Facebook?
Right. You have to use a VPN.
Oh, but you can get through the VPN.
You can get around here with a VPN.
Okay, but they've blocked YouTube, Facebook, Google, everything.
Every social media is blocked.
Yeah, right.
So, and to cut a very long story short, it became apparent to me that they appeared to want me to do cultural things. I was being groomed for Press TV. They bought me suits. The guy's saying, "You're incredible in front of the camera. You just knock things out like that at the drop of a hat. You're articulate. You look good on the cameraman. We'll get you a job, blah, 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 blah." But I said, "Look, no offense. I don't even want a job with Press TV. I want to talk about Israeli intelligence activity and this Jewish racial and religious supremacism. Can we organize a conference?" Now, I had to argue for 3 weeks just to get to the Israeli intelligence activity stage. They didn't want to talk about it. Now, that was just too bizarre for me. I had stand-up fights with him. I'll walk. Yeah. I said, "David, I will walk because this is too bizarre for me. There's been too many strange things happen. I don't feel comfortable." He said, "Well, if you want to leave, Brandon, we just want you to be happy, man." He was a real groomer, man.
Yeah.
If I ever turned out he was a pedophile, I don't mean to say that insultingly. I mean it. I've got a sixth sense for people, man, and
so
I did not
smooth,
like him.
Yeah.
Very smooth, man. Just very strange. He said to me one day in the gym, "Gee, Brandon, it must be good hanging around a really masculine man like me." I just went, "What the hell?"
Okay,
it was bizarro world. It would take me an hour just to explain him. And in the end, they did agree to begin the instigation of a conference. I spoke with or texted via Facebook Dr. Alan Sabrowski, former head of studies, U.S. Army War College. He was very enthusiastic. And in the end, it's a very long story, but I just couldn't stand it there anymore. I said, "This is too weird. There's something bizarre going on. I've got to get out of here. I don't feel comfortable."
So you thought they were sort of acting a little bit as gatekeepers in terms of not allowing certain subjects to be...
That's what appeared, particularly the Jewish racial and religious supremacism. The lawyer said he had a Jewish mentor who was Orthodox, and he didn't like hearing about it. And I tried to educate him. He was strange. It looked like he was on drugs at times. His giggling and carrying on was inappropriate. I thought he was mentally ill, bipolar or something, or high levels of Zoloft. It was bizarre. He had to be there. I walked out of lot. $1,000 phone, here you go. $1,500 laptop, here you go. $500 tablet, Sony tablet, here you go.
So they,
money,
they,
here you go.
They gave you
whatever
that.
I wanted. Whatever I wanted.
Really?
It was a beautiful apartment in northern near the ski fields. Whatever I wanted. Just don't talk about Israel.
Just don't talk about Israel. The one thing that your one thing that you have to talk about. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it was bizarre. It was ridiculous. I thought maybe my theory was, I speculate that the lady I stayed with, son, is Iranian and in Swiss banking.
Yes.
And I started to realize that perhaps more of the European cultured Jewish community and banking community, perhaps UK banking community, who I believe definitely dislike Netanyahu completely. Netanyahu's probably got them all on film. There are a bunch of, pedophile rings go into that
Actually,
level.
Can I just ask, we've only got a few minutes, but I just want to get a perspective on you. If you were able, it's probably very hard, you were only there a short time and you were within a very controlled environment. But to what extent is the kind of, the image we have about the Iranian revolution, the Iranian Revolutionary Army, the theocracy, the chanting people who follow 100% Islamic law, to what what extent is that applicable to Iran? Or did you see a different side to Iran? From what you're describing to me, it seems very different. I mean, it seems like the people you're describing are very cosmopolitan, very, very Europeanized. To what extent is this this image of the extreme fundamentalism of Iran correct?
It's not correct. It's nothing like a Saudi Wahhabi stuff. It's nothing. There's no Sharia law there. It's probably got a more fairer justice system than the West. Seriously, I'm not joking. They have one of the best drug rehabilitation programs in the world. They have a lot of drug problems there, meth, cocaine, and heroin in particular. They smoke marijuana on the streets. It's tolerated. They have little art festivals, painting, art, culture. Nothing like what they say. The only thing is their alcohol and basically do it in private, the government doesn't care. They don't kick your door in for it, they don't care. But if you come out on the streets drunk, you're going
to
be in trouble.
How would you, I mean, just I have to get into the actual practicalities. Let's say you wanted to get a bottle of whiskey, how would you get hold of one?
No, there's a black market. It has to be, you'd have to know someone. It's like drug, it's like any drug dealer, you'd have to know that person.
Oh, okay, so they'd go through some sort of back channel, right.
Yeah.
Do those back channels exist?
Oh, absolutely. You can get anything. You can get anything there, cocaine, whatever you want.
Whatever you want, yeah.
The government doesn't care as long as you don't embarrass Iran.
Okay, so they're not involved in high-profile busts of people, you know, sipping a glass of wine or something. I mean, this is what you imagine. You know, you're going to be thrown in jail and flogged for having a glass of wine. You know, I mean,
it's not a nice place to be if you're gay. Although there was clearly a LGBT community of some sort there. I can spot them. I've got a lot of gay friends and I can spot them a mile away, but no one cares. Look, there are very conservative places in Iran, like Hansa was very conservative.
Yeah.
Tehran is very cosmopolitan. There's the South Tehran crew, the Barefoots, they call them, President Mahmoud or ex-President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad's crowd. It's varied. And the North Tehran crowd are very cosmopolitan. And let me tell you, they'd sell out to the US and Israel in a second. Don't you worry about that.
Right. And I mean, this is very interesting, which I think we have to bear in mind that Iran, you know, with this vast wealth that it has, and obviously an inner elite there, an establishment who are very wealthy, there is always a possibility that that this will happen. We're just about running out of time. I've just got a lot of other questions, but not really time enough to even frame them. So what's next for you, Brendan, just quickly in the next half a minute?
Warrants for my arrest, and I have to probably, I just don't have the funding or the resources to carry on the fight. And I'm just going to have to head back to Australia and start fighting them again, try to get to the high court.
Well, that's great, and you're going to really then raise these questions about the legislation, and I'm going to talk to you again about it, because that's one of the main things I'm talking about on the show a lot, is this these legislations that need to be rolled back. We've got to end it. We've got to end all this politically correct rubbish that is in our laws. That's the end of the show, Brendan. It's been great having you on, mate. We'll be talking again soon.
Thanks, Hayward. Great to be here.
Cheers. Truth News Radio Australia signing off. I'll be back next week. See you then.